Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to the Toe Meets Leather podcast. We're here with our playoff week going into the semifinals for the college football playoffs. And we're about halfway through the bowl season. Plenty of bowls left, but we've had quite a few to get excited about so far. As always, I'm here with Andrew and Nigel. How are y'all doing this week, guys? Looking forward to the new year?
It is a short week, so I am happy.
You and me both, brother.
Do y'all have any big New Year's resolutions you'd like to share with our listeners?
Not to kill any New Year's resolutioners in the gym.
My New Year's resolution is for Nigel to stop skipping leg day.
I don't think you can live up to that resolution, man.
I mean, it's going to be a hard fight, but I think that I might can do it for a month or so.
I think my New Year's resolution is to stop calling targeting calls on every pass downfield. But I can make no promises. It's just too easy nowadays. All right, we'll get right into it. Nigel, why don't you start us off? We've seen, like we were saying earlier, we've seen plenty of bowl games this year, much more than we've seen the past few years. I've heard a lot of things. There's not as many fans in the stands. Just the number of games has decreased things. But I know you've got some things that you're excited about with all these bowl games that you've seen. So why don't you go into it for us?
Yeah, I have a list of a few things that I think has, you know, gone really well. I guess my first thing would be success of teams that were 5-7 going into bowl season. And that's always kind of frowned upon. They're under 500. You know, obviously there weren't enough 6-6 teams to kind of fill out the bracket, you know, once again showing the amount of bowl games that are happening every year. But actually, the teams that are 5-7 going into bowl season are 3-0. So, you know, congratulations to those teams, you know, not only to get an extra game, but to actually win that extra game. You know, maybe they're getting overlooked, but, you know, they definitely performed, and I'm happy, you know, that they got a chance. In terms of success, the ACC, before, you know, obviously the UNC-Baylor game is going on right now, but the ACC is 500 at 2-2 so far in their bowl games. The Pac-12, who was left out of the playoffs, is actually 4-1 in their bowl games. Surprisingly, the only loss is UCLA, who's a pretty good team, but I think just was decimated by injuries by this point in the season. And then I think the third thing that I'm really excited about was Keenan Reynolds finishing on top of the rushing touchdown record to finish out his career. You know, he goes out as, you know, one of the winningest players in Navy's history, and for him to end up with the most rushing touchdowns in all of college football history is just amazing. So kudos to him. And I think that's just a few things that I'm excited about so far. And I think we're about halfway through bowl season, so it's, you know, we got a lot more games to go and hopefully a lot more excitement, and we'll see kind of how things go.
Yeah, and I'm not going to lie, that's something I'm most excited about, because that's really the whole point of the season, the reason for the season, to let players go out there and improve themselves and have a good last game and kind of set their careers online. And Keenan Reynolds definitely did that. Andrew, do you got anything that you were really pumped up about this bowl season?
I loved that Navy-Pittsburgh game. I think it was awesome to see, and I'm not sure if Neema did it as kind of an FU to BYU, because when he went out to talk to them about that job, a lot of fans were, oh, we don't want him to come run his offense, we don't want him to blah, 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 da-da-da. And he came out the first few snaps against Pittsburgh were out of the I form. Now, he did run the option, but he ran them out of three wide I form, which was really cool to watch. And I think was really kind of a big FU to BYU that was like, look, we can do a lot of different things in this offense. You know, it's great to see Navy, especially later in the year, really, really ran a lot of tackle over heavy, which allowed them to do some interesting things. And then they ran empty. I mean, it was really exciting to see some of the wrinkles that Neema and Ivan Jasper, the OC, were able to put together given an extended time period, and show that the offense that he runs and that Johnson runs at Georgia Tech has a lot of wrinkles that can be employed, and it's definitely an offense that is a lot more adaptable to talent than people really give credit for.
Yeah, and that's something that I've noticed this season. I was actually looking at it earlier before the Navy game. All the teams that run that system are just dominating in the bowl season. You know, Georgia Southern comes to mind because they crushed Bowling Green. But, you know, like you said, the Navy game was great. Who am I forgetting? There's one other team that ran that system that did really well this year.
New Mexico ran some option, which was really fascinating to watch, the way that they ran a lot of two-back out of the shotgun option, which is something we've seen a little bit of out of other places. Yeah. Air Force had a really, really rough day today. They couldn't get in between the tackle runs really established, and Cal brought a great defensive game plan to that game, as well as it's tough to play defense at the academies. You're going to be undersized. You're probably going to be a little slow, so you've got to really adapt and a strong bend but don't break style philosophy.
Well, and that was also Jared Goff's last game, so I think he might have had a chip on his shoulder. Not necessarily his last game, but I think we all expect it to be his last game in a Cal uniform. So like you said, there's plenty to look forward to. Now, I've heard a lot of critiques about the number of fans in the stands over the holiday season. Is that really a concern for y'all as fans of the game?
I can see how the bowls are concerned about it, because obviously ticket revenue is going to drive a lot of things. It's going to drive sponsorships. It's going to drive, you know, and some of these lower bowls, if they even exist. I think it's really kind of tough sometimes with these bowl games. I think one of the best things you can do is really regionalize a lot of these smaller bowls that don't match the premier programs. I think having the bowl in Detroit between Central Michigan and Minnesota, I think, was fantastic. Playing the bowl in Birmingham between Memphis and Auburn, I think that's great, because I think you're getting teams within good distance of their fan base heartland, and it allows the travel to be easier. In some cases, it can turn it into, you know, a doable day trip where you're not having to stay the night, you're not having to spend hotel money, and you're able to do that. I think the interesting one is going to be, and there were issues with this last year, is a lot of fans for the playoff teams had issues because a lot of these fans and their families had to make the decision, all right, we can go to one. Do we go to the quarterfinals or do we go to the finals if we make it? And I think that's the thing is you know, it's tough sometimes, especially with only a month's notice or less of where you're going and trying to get all that together. You're going to run into some cost issues, and you know, you're seeing it across the board that college football in general is having some problems in some places completely filling stadiums. You know, you've got to create a reason, why do I want to come to the stadium when I can sit on my couch with a giant TV, drink beer and watch a bunch of different games instead.
Well, that's true. And a lot of these stadiums that I've brought up before in a lot of our team talks, it's hard to get to these stadiums. It's not the easiest thing to do. Nigel, do you have any thoughts?
No, I mean, kind of harking to the same things that Andrew was saying. For me, you know, it's holiday season. If you just spent a lot on gifts, you're going for somewhere on Christmas, or you're going somewhere for New Year's, you're just strapped for cash. You know, you're strapped for cash. And then I still, people in general are still kind of recovering from, you know, just kind of, especially let's say you and your spouse went to two different schools that are both big. Who do you decide to bowl game to go to? Maybe you go to theirs one year, you go to yours another year. So I think there probably a lot of factors playing into the little bit of lower attendance. And like Andrew said, you know, if it's easier for you to just sit on your couch, then you're just going to sit on your couch. You know, I think a lot of people who go to bowl games are, you know, either people who have the time and the money or people who are young who just have a lot of money and a lot of time. So, you know, if the young people aren't going, and especially with us, we're like, oh, yeah, I could just watch all the bowl games on TV. I think it's just easier. So, you know, it'll definitely be something to see. Kind of, you know, I'd like to see a couple of years of it. But I think, you know, we'll see. 1 year does not make a trend. So I don't think it's too bad.
All right, fair enough. That said, I'm going to go ahead and go over the records we got right now for our bowl pick'em. We got Nigel with the least number of wins. He is currently 3-4. Andrew, the second most number of wins, 4-1. And I am sitting on top, 6-4. Woo! I know percentage-wise, probably not as much, but right now I'm enjoying having the most wins. I guess because I picked all the early games. We'll see how that turns up in the end. Obviously, Andrew is the top dog, assuming all his last picks go through. So, Andrew, I guess since you're still in the lead, you got any comments before we move on to our playoffs topics?
You know, I thought I picked a lot of bowls that, to me, looking at the matchups, were fairly strongly in my favor of who I picked. You know, the only one that I'm just still scratching my head as to why in the hell I picked them is Georgia State. I don't even like Georgia State. In fact, I would honestly come out to say that I dislike Georgia State. Like, I want them to lose. I was happy when they were 0-12. I don't know why I picked them.
Because they were going against a 5-7 team, and you're like, how can they possibly screw this up?
I mean, very true. I mean, it was San Jose State.
Never doubt San Jose State. San Jose State.
Right now I'm watching UNC just, I don't know what they're doing. What are they doing right now? I mean, there's a lot going on.
Well, not only do the refs want them to lose, apparently UNC doesn't want to win because they're just kind of giving the game away right now.
Yeah.
I think Marquise Williams is hurt. I think you watch him trying to step into his throws, and he's underthrowing tons of them. Something's just off about him that screams more than just head games.
Well, I understand. They were literally driving down the field, and I mean, it's unfortunate that the ball was turned over, but I mean, you can't tackle them and stop them. You can't afford those mistakes.
I mean, North Carolina has given up 455 yards on the ground to Baylor. Baylor is averaging 8.1 yards a carry. You want to talk about a way to win a game? That's definitely.
I can't think of a good.
The run game.
I can't think of a good reason for why that's happening though, because I know UNC doesn't have the best defense, but they should be able to slow down this running game at least.
God have mercy.
I just feel like they didn't prepare at all. Okay, yes, they scored. Get over it. Okay.
God have mercy.
I'm gonna mute you, Nigel. All right. So anyway.
What I saw. Oh my god.
So remember how I brought up
UNC, Elizabeth. I mean, we're friends, but why did I pick UNC?
So,
oh my god.
Do y'all remember last week how I was saying the ACC should play less Power 5 teams? Anyway.
Yes, I'm done. Let's talk about playoffs.
All right. Let's talk about playoffs. I'm going to start with the one that our people want to listen to, which is the big matchup, Alabama versus Michigan State. And we'll build into the Clemson-Oklahoma matchup. So let's start off, though. Nigel, I know you have some points that you want to make about Alabama. So please, well, okay, I'll start with Andrew instead. Andrew, you have some points that you want to make about someone, I'm sure. So please, go ahead and start us off.
Logan, are you telling me that I like to talk just to hear the sound of my own voice sometimes? Because if you are, then I agree with you. I think Alabama got the matchup they wanted for this round. I think what Michigan State does on offense plays extremely well into Alabama's defense. I think Saban and Alabama has shown some issues in the past with your spread, option, hurry-up stuff. And I think being able to play a team that's downhill runs, that plays with a fullback, that wants to try to line up and hit you in the mouth, is just playing in to Nick Saban's hands. I think it's a great matchup for them. I think it's probably the best team that either team has played all season. I think they were kind of tested a little bit. I think Michigan State's probably played a better team in Ohio State than anyone that Alabama played. But I think if you go overall, Alabama's probably played a better group of teams than Michigan State has. Plus, Alabama's loss to me isn't as bad as Michigan State's loss, even though Nebraska did end up 6-7 after winning their bowl game. But I think it's definitely going to be a low-scoring game, even with Derrick Henry and that talent. Michigan State comes to play defense, and that's what their calling card has been. That's what Nick Saban's calling card has been. I think it's going to be a punch-you-in-the-mouth defensive slobber knocker. I'm talking like a 17-10 type game.
I think that sounds about right, though. I wish y'all could have seen Nigel going off in the corner, but I feel like he wanted to be the hype man or maybe the pastor, just be like, preach, brother, preach. Oh. But yeah, I do agree. I think defense is going to play a big factor. Nigel, I'll let you into the ring now. What do you got to say?
Andrew, my brother, you are reading my mind. Verbatim.
That's a really scary thing.
Exactly. You don't want to be in here. I haven't cleaned up lately. The last time that Alabama won a national title in 2012, the teams they have lost to, Texas A&M, Oklahoma, Auburn, Ohio State, Ole Miss, and then Ole Miss. Only Oklahoma did not run the spread primarily as their offense. They got the matchup they needed. Like, in my mind, I would have loved to seen Oklahoma, who is, I think, as hot as anybody right now against Alabama, because I know for a fact Alabama would have had problems with Baker Mayfield and the running backs at Oklahoma. I feel a little gypped just because I feel like the committee didn't need to even swap places with Michigan State and Oklahoma. I mean, I understand they're basically saying that Michigan State is better than Oklahoma. But in my mind, the teams that we knew were going to make the playoffs made the playoffs at that point in time because Michigan State ended up beating Iowa. They could have just moved everybody, kept everybody where they were. I feel a little bit like this is rigged. Like, everybody knows that Alabama does not do well against spread teams, and this is how you help them get to the national title game. Oklahoma and Clemson played last year, so we already know. The major difference, obviously, is Baker Mayfield was not on that team.
And Lincoln Riley
were not there last year. That marriage is, I mean, probably the best union in college football this year. So, you know, obviously, this is going to be a little bit of a different team. Everybody that thinks Clemson's just going to walk into it is probably, you know, going to be surprised. But I would have loved one of those teams. I would have loved Oklahoma just against Alabama. But I agree with Andrew. I don't think this is going to be a blowout. I think these two teams are too similar. And, you know, it's going to be up to the Alabama wide receivers to take advantage of the one-on-one matchups. I think Alabama's going to win this game. Even though I don't like to think like that, I'm wondering how long it will take before Alabama knocks Connor Cook out of the game. There, I said it. We all know it's going to happen. We've accepted it. I hope you've accepted it. Alabama's going to win.
Well, I didn't want to quite do the picks just yet, but since we're on the topic, Andrew, I guess, who's your pick? And do you think the committee kind of set Alabama up in this situation? That's kind of that's a bit of a stretch for a conspiracy theory.
I get where you're coming from, Nigel. I don't really buy the conspiracy theory. I think two factors really played into it. I believe they thought that the loss to Texas was much worse than the loss to Nebraska. And you can kind of look at that, especially how the wheels just completely fell off of that Texas program later in the season. I think the other thing is they didn't want to play Oklahoma in Dallas, or I guess Jerry World, because that probably gives them a bit of an unfair advantage being that close to campus and that close to the heart of their fan base. Now, obviously, it didn't really prevent LSU from playing for national titles and Sugar Bowls, but that was the BCS, not the playoffs. So it'll be interesting to see if a team like LSU is in the Sugar Bowl, and the Sugar Bowl is a playoff, whether or not that plays into where they seat the teams. But I think it's a close game. I think both defenses come to play. I think the unsung guy that's really going to be it is going to be Jake Coker at Alabama. If he can make enough plays with his arm and his feet to augment Derrick Henry and just get the chains moving a little bit, I don't think they're going to put a lot on his shoulders and ask him to win the game. But I think his play and then Connor Cook's on the other side, whether he comes back completely healthy or not, and their ability to manage the talent and to deal with what will be the best defenses either team has faced all season.
Did you actually give a pick?
I mean, Alabama wins it in a very close, very physical game.
Okay. I will surprise, I guess, you guys and take devil's advocate here, but I do have some stats to back it up. Much like the Bama-LSU game, I do have some stats to say that Michigan State has the edge on paper in this matchup. So Michigan State, in their games against top teams, have come out on top because of their ability to stop the run game. So four big matchups. Michigan State versus Oregon. They held a team that averages 287.8 yards on the ground to 123 rush yards. Against Michigan, they held a team that averages 152 yards on the ground to 62. Against Ohio State, which was probably the biggest opponent on their schedule, Ohio State averages 241.9 yards on the ground. They held Ohio State to 86. And then, of course, Iowa in the Big Ten Championship. Iowa averages 192. They held Iowa to 52. Now, a big component of Alabama's offense is being able to run the ball with Derrick Henry. Now, you can make the argument, how are you actually going to shut them down? Because they haven't seen a runner like that before. But if they're able to do what they did against those four other teams, and those are big rushing teams, they're all in the top 40 of rushing yards, that's going to go a long way to shutting down Bama's offense. Because you're basically putting it all on Coker at that point. And while Coker has been good, I would not call him a great quarterback. And I'm not sure that even Saban would have the confidence to have him carry the game squarely on his shoulders. Now, second off, Alabama's only loss this year is to Ole Miss. And the reason that they lost was not because of the rushing game, where they have been very strong at preventing the rushing games of other teams. It's in the passing game. Ole Miss had 341 passing yards in that matchup. And Michigan State, while these yards are coming up with Connor Cook still in the offense, and we're not sure if he's going to be coming back healthy, they do average more yards in the air. They get 236.1 yards passing per game on the season. And rushing yards, they only get 160.7. So their focus is more on the passing game, even if it is just slightly so. So if they're going to win, they need to do well in the passing game, and they need to shut down the running game of Alabama. So I think on paper they have the advantage, But like you said, going up against a team face-to-face, it's a different kind of battle. And I think the talent that Alabama has does give them the edge. But on paper, at least, Michigan State does have the advantage. And I think they've probably got a better chance of beating Alabama in this matchup than any opponent that Bama has faced this year. Fine, tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, first of all, you're wrong. Alabama lost the Ole Miss game because they had 5 turnovers. They outgained Ole Miss. They ran for 5 yards a carry. They held Ole Miss to 4 for 14 on third down. They lost that game because they turned the ball over 5 times and because of one of the flukiest touchdown plays I think we've seen all season. That's why Alabama lost that game. I mean, they, like I said, on paper...
All that proves to me...
Alabama had better numbers than Ole Miss in every single facet except the turnover battle.
Well, all that proves to me is that Jake Coker will turn the ball over given the chance.
Jake Coker didn't play until the second half, and only 2 of those turnovers are on Jake Coker's shoulders.
He still turned the ball over twice in that matchup.
The biggest mistake in that game was starting Cooper Bateman. I think if you start Jake Coker, I think Alabama wins it, and I don't think it's very close.
Well, we can't have that argument now, do we? We just have Jake Coker turn the ball over twice in the second half. So he played 30 minutes, 2 quarters, and he turned the ball over twice.
You can win a game turning the ball over twice with the kind of numbers Alabama put up. You can't win the game turning it over 5 times with those kind of numbers.
Yeah, who lost the fumbles? There were 2 fumbles lost. I hate college because they don't attribute the fumbles to anybody.
And that's the other thing. If Derrick Henry fumbled the ball, then guess what? That's still, like, in favor of Michigan State because they've got one of the best run defenses.
Jake Coker ran the ball pretty well, too.
I mean, but you also have to look at the fact that Michigan State lost to a 5-7 Nebraska team.
Flukes happen.
My bad, 6-7. I mean, if you're going to start comparing loss, Michigan State easily has the worst loss out of the pair.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I'm not even talking about losses. I'm just talking about stats-wise. And in that game, they gave up basically 350 yards passing in the air. And, yes, they did turn the ball over on the ground and in the air with Jake Coker to a good defense on the day and a pretty bad defense afterwards. So you got to wonder, when they're going up against a good defense, are they going to show the same numbers? I don't know about that.
I mean, but then you look at what they did against LSU, who's arguably a better defense than Ole Miss.
What did they do against LSU exactly? They basically shut down LSU's offense, and they couldn't run the ball, and they couldn't move the ball. So Alabama just had the ball, and they did whatever they wanted with it.
Which, that, I mean, that's what a good offense does.
Right. Because they have the ball all the time.
So they didn't turn the ball over, which allowed them to help win the game.
They controlled the ball on defense, and they got the ball as many times as they pleased.
I mean, any coach worth his salt is going to tell you winning the turnover battle is always going to be one of the keys to winning the game.
That's great, but that's not something that you can predict necessarily.
No, but I'm saying that's what played the biggest role in the Ole Miss game.
Okay, fine. So we throw out the Ole Miss game. Michigan State's still one of the best running defenses on paper. What do you got?
I mean, so is LSU. And you look at what happened in that game.
Yeah, but LSU didn't have an offense that could do anything. And I brought that up when we brought up the LSU game.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about Alabama's offense versus the defense they play. I had this exact same argument with an Ole Miss fan earlier today, so that's why it's got me a little riled up. And the Ole Miss fan, Logan, was way less informed than you are.
So what you're saying is you want to hug it out. You should go to Augusta and hug it out.
Hug it out. Always hug it out.
And let it stop at hugging. Don't go too far.
Says the guy sitting in his living room in a tank top.
Hey, I'm always ready for an adventure. That's what I like to call them, adventures. But on to the next game. Clemson, Oklahoma, the game that I'm actually excited to see. Why is Alabama at 8 o'clock?
Because everybody wants to see Alabama. You know that's why they're at 8 o'clock.
Wants to see Alabama. Well, I'm sorry, you're right, Logan. Everybody but me wants to see Alabama.
I mean, I get what you're saying, but don't lie to yourself. You know why the game is at 8 o'clock.
I know. It's marketing, and it's an SEC team, and Alabama's a big school, and et cetera, et cetera. But, I didn't understand. That was really – I think I'm more irked by that than anything else, is that I just don't understand how that's the more exciting matchup between the two playoff games. Like, I mean, Andrew, would you agree, or I feel like that the Oklahoma Clemson game is definitely more exciting.
Am I muted? I can't tell.
No, we can hear you.
I think exciting is a relative term. Everyone's going to find excitement in different parts of the game.
True.
You know, I think if you're looking for a game where you're going to see offensive fireworks, it's definitely going to be the Clemson Oklahoma game. Mm-hmm. Also, for the record, Alabama, in terms of yards per game, has the number one rushing defense in the country. I didn't realize that. Michigan State's 7, so I'll give you that. Scroll, computer, you piece of garbage. Wow, Arkansas is 16th, which would be the highest that Alabama faced, followed by Florida at 17. Huh. LSU, wow, LSU's all the way down at 24.
Yeah, that's kind of...
at 26.
That's kind of what I was looking at this year, is that LSU stats just don't add up as strong as you think they do. But that said, yeah, they have faced...
I have definitely just realized that.
They have faced a lot of good defenses. I'm just saying, if you're arguing complete... I'm not going to lie. The game's going to be tight. It's going to be defensive-oriented. We can all agree on that. I'm just saying, and I made the same argument in the LSU matchup, if you're looking on paper... Alabama's offense does not match up well against this defense. Now, can Coker prove me wrong? He totally can. But I don't see it being as easy as everybody seems to think it is. And also, if you look in the LSU game, it was all Henry, 200 yards on the ground. Coker had like 128 in the air. So, again, that's not exactly on Coker. If they do shut down Henry, that's the big if. It's all going to be on Coker's shoulders. And I don't know that he's proven in the games that he's played so far that he's the kind of guy that can live up to that.
Yeah, I agree with you. But I think you can also flip that script completely and look at the Alabama defense versus a Michigan State offense. Michigan State offense really hasn't impressed anyone. You know, I mean, at least Alabama's been able to ride Derrick Henry. You know, I can't even say a lot about Michigan State's offense. I mean, they needed a last-second field goal to beat Ohio State. Obviously, Ohio State's a good team. But, I mean, they beat a Michigan team that's decent. I mean, not great, but they beat a Michigan team on a dropped snap on a punt that only happens one time out of 100. You know, I mean, and that's the thing about it, really, in terms of playing for a national title, a lot of times it takes a lot of luck. I mean, it's always going to take the ball bouncing the right way sometimes for you to win it.
Hey, and I mean, clearly, Michigan State has had to go both ways this time. I'm just excited. I think it'll be a good matchup. The spread is at 10, and I don't think that that's right. It'll probably be a field goal game.
Yeah, and spread seems way too high. What's the over-under?
I don't have it here with me. Hold on a second.
Did you ever make your pick, Logan?
I'm going with Michigan State because on paper I'm playing devil's advocate here. I'm going Michigan State. God, why? It's so hard to find this thing. Well, the spread is 10 in Bama's favor. The money line, over under odds are 47.
I would take it, and I would say under.
Yeah.
To me, that almost feels like you're stealing money.
I don't understand where they come up with that. But anyway, yeah. That, it is what it is. Nigel, you're muted.
Sorry, I totally forgot I was muted. Vegas scares me a lot, though, because they will predict some ish that I'm, what? That actually happened? Like, the number of times Vegas just knows things is creepy.
They're in the business.
I think someone explained it to me is you got to realize that Vegas does a lot of their stuff based upon the money, so it's not nearly as...
That's true.
You know, they think this team's going to win, but blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, the money does move the lines, so...
The house always wins. There's a reason that saying exists. So
that's true.
They wouldn't set up a dumb bet for themselves. All right, let's finally move on. Okay, we all agree Michigan State, Alabama, going to be a great game. We kind of understand why it's prime time. Let's move on to the other matchup, and I'm going to let you guys talk about it because I feel like I held this up here. Also, I really don't have anything to say. Clemson, Oklahoma. The only thing statistic-wise that I was able to pick out in this is that Clemson is slightly better on defense and Oklahoma is slightly better on offense. Otherwise, there's not really a big difference from these teams. They both have quarterbacks who are in the Heisman discussion. They both have similar systems, at least, on offense in that they run the spread. It's going to be an interesting matchup. The only real difference, I guess you could say, is that Clemson has a better home field advantage because their fans don't have to travel nearly as far. But even still, I don't really know what to say about this matchup. It's going to be close one way or the other, but I couldn't predict if it'd be offense or defense. Andrew, I'll start off with you this time because reasons. Go ahead and give me some details.
And to me... This feels like the harder game to pick because both teams have been extremely hot. I mean, Oklahoma may be the hottest team in the country. I think the biggest thing you've seen is the maturation of the Baker Mayfield, Lincoln Riley, Brangelina type power couple where you've seen them both adapt and be able to utilize their talents. I think the big thing, too, is you really saw Oklahoma after the Texas game try to get back to using that two-headed monster of Samaje Perine and Joe Mixon and run the ball. And I think that was a big thing for Riley is having come from that air raid, throw the ball around offense, he took some time to learn how to use the weapons at hand. I think now that he's been able to do it, I think they've been fantastic. I think the biggest question to me is I'm not 100% sure how tested Clemson has been. They've had some close games and they've had some fights, but in terms of all the teams they've played, to me they've always been the most talented team on the field, the closest maybe being Florida State or Notre Dame. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how well Clemson does when there's that parity level of talent almost across the board. You know, Clemson's been amazing on defense this year. You know, how that coordinator has not been a discussed name for other jobs just blows my mind. I think especially if Clemson wins it this year, I think his name's going to be all over the place as the guy to look at in the big Kirby Smart type name come next year. You know, I think the other one is this is going to be the biggest game of Deshaun Watson's young career. And as a sophomore, it's going to be tough. It's going to be in the spotlight. I mean, he seems like a great kid. Seems like he handles it well. But it's a lot easier to sit in front of the camera and talk about stuff than it is when you're on the field running for your life. So I think that's going to play a big role in it, too. You know, which way to go? I don't know. It's a tough game to pick.
Anytime you feel ready, Nigel, feel free to say something.
I didn't know if you wanted a minute or not. I'm with Andrew. This is why I thought it was the more exciting game, because I myself could not pick a winner. I will admit that I jumped on the Oklahoma bandwagon because I just loved Baker Mayfield, what he brought to this team. They have taken on his identity. And it just rolled. I mean, he is a savant in that offense, and it is just amazing to see him get a second chance, the air raid get a second chance at Oklahoma. I mean, just a perfect mix. And you don't see that as much as you would love to see it. I think we saw it last year at Georgia Tech, where you had Justin Thomas and Paul Johnson. I mean, just sometimes a perfect marriage happens, and everything just flows, and it's just beautiful to watch an offense that just gels like that. Like Andrew said, they went back to the running game, and I think that just made them even stronger. So this is a very hard game, just because I feel like, Logan, I kind of agree with what you said. I think Clemson's the better team on defense. They're a young defense, though. I think one of the key matchups that I look at this game is Clemson's left tackle is a freshman. They actually did a story on him, and how Woody Hayes basically led the punch that he threw led to him being basically at Clemson through that shocking correlation. He's still a freshman, and I don't know the pass rushers at Oklahoma probably as well as an Oklahoma fan, but I don't know if they have the pass rushers to take advantage. That was the one spot that I looked. I think he obviously has the talent, or Clemson wouldn't have the offense that they do. But I always see a freshman, if he plays against an experienced player, what is that player going to do that maybe he just doesn't have the experience, you know, and the backlog in his brain to kind of go against and, you know, will be taken advantage of. But I don't see that on Oklahoma, the pass rushers to take advantage of him. So I'm going to go with Clemson on this one, even though it's hard to go against Oklahoma. I really like what Oklahoma's done. They've actually saved the Big 12 this year, where Baylor and TCU kind of faltered, and, you know, they were being discussed last year. If you had told me that Oklahoma was going to be the one that came out of the Big 12 this year, I think a lot of people would have been very surprised. So I'm going to go with Clemson, though, just in terms of Deshaun Watson. I think he's ready for the moment. They have a really good running back who, you know, has definitely come on, especially of late. The wide receiver position will be kind of questioned. Obviously, they lost their key guy very early in the season, but I just think they make enough plays to get the win, and it'll probably be Clemson versus Alabama, which will be a nice title game, but that's my prediction.
Andrew, did you actually give us a team?
I didn't, but I think the interesting thing to me is going to be, we really saw it last year in the Oklahoma-Clemson game, where the two co-offensive coordinators at Clemson really came out in their first game and tailored the offense extremely well to the talent of the quarterback and to what they were seeing on defense. So I'm interested to see if they're able to do that again and what kind of adjustments are made at Oklahoma. I think Clemson will win it. I think it'll probably be a fairly high-scoring game, easily a higher-scoring game than the one on the other side. I think it sets up a national title, Alabama-Clemson, where you have the current head coach of the Crimson Tide against the future head coach of the Crimson Tide, and it'll definitely be a great game matching two very different styles of really everything about the programs.
Fair enough. Going with the trend, and this one, again, I didn't draw up any statistics because these teams are very similar. But I'll go play devil's advocate. I will say Oklahoma wins this game. And I actually think, again, no real basis for this, but I think, like, in this particular matchup, when you get two high-scoring offenses, if one gets knocked on their face really quickly, they tend to just fall apart. We saw that kind of with Florida State last year going against Oregon. Oregon didn't have the toughest defense on paper, but you wouldn't have known it that day. So I'm going to say it's going to be a blowout. Oklahoma finally cuts into Deshaun Watson and just makes people realize that he's human. Again, no real basis for that. I just think that it's something that's going to happen, and it'll set up for an interesting matchup in the playoff between two teams that I don't think anybody really saw coming at the beginning of the year, Michigan State and Oklahoma. So that'll be a fun one. All right, guys, really quick, I want to get your opinion. Chip Kelly is it back on the board. He's available for a coaching position. Do you think he'll take a spot at the college level? And if so, where might he end up? I'll start with you this time, Nigel, because it looks like you're finally able to talk.
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting question, Logan. Obviously, with the recent developments, I think he's going back to the college ranks. It seems like one of the things that caused him to be let go was not wanting to give up personnel decisions. And so he just basically lost his job. Instead of giving up half of his power, he just lost all of it. I think he likes being in control. He likes getting his players, the players he needs for his system. I think he goes back to the college ranks. I don't know where, because I don't think there's a position open right now that he is would just love to have. So I think he's gonna take this year off and he's gonna end up somewhere come next year. I don't know who, I don't know where, but you know we'll see. Maybe if Charlie Strong doesn't make it another year, maybe he's the guy they look at. That'd be an interesting fit. I don't know if he would fit that style at Texas, but I mean that's the first position that comes to mind for me. I might be have a limited thought process here.
I think he takes a year off. Actually, I think he's the next head coach of the Tennessee Titans, in all honesty. But if he doesn't get that job, I think he takes a year off, because I don't think, like you said, any of the jobs sitting out there right now are really jobs that he wants, or schools that are going to sink the money into him, what they probably would be knowing as a one-year job. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think Charlie Strong's leash gets extremely short. I think if he doesn't show a lot of progress next year, I don't even know if making a bowl game saves his job. I think he's got to show great progress or he's gone. You know, other guys, Kentucky could fire Stoops, but I don't know if Kelly's a guy that'll go there. Malzahn and Auburn's obviously really questionable depending on how they do next year.
That's true. I mean, there are a lot of guys who got a little bit of fire under their butt knowing that he's sitting out there and that he's a very attractive candidate to have. Obviously, it didn't work out at the NFL level for him the past 2 years, but, I mean, he does get results at the college level, where I think like him, a Nick Saban type, he likes being in control. If you get him in the right place, he can get the right players. I think it works. Andrew, that was a good suggestion with Tennessee Titans. I did not think about that position. But obviously with Mariota there, that is definitely something to keep an eye on. I will be paying attention for that because I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, like I said, that's the thing to me is I think he's going to go to a place where he's going to want to, like you said, have that control. But I think there's only certain college jobs that really fit him. Yeah. I don't think he's a guy – I mean, even you look at all the coaches – that left the college game to go to the NFL, didn't have a lot of success and came back. Saban landed at Alabama. Spurrier landed at South Carolina. Petrino landed at Arkansas. Jim Mora Jr. landed at UCLA. Pete Carroll at USC. You know, you don't see a lot of these guys take G5 or mid-major jobs. They're guys that come down for the high major programs, and that's really going to be the question is next year, what programs? I think James Franklin at Vanderbilt might be a questionable one if he doesn't show better than a 7-5 season, especially with a horrible regression that we saw at Hackenberg this year.
You mean Penn State?
Wait, who did I say?
You said Vanderbilt. No, I understand the mistake.
He might need to go back to Vanderbilt. The big question to me is if Oregon has another 9-3, 8-4 season, do they try to get back into that sweepstakes? Because he didn't get fired at Oregon. He left for the NFL. And I have no idea his relationship with the AD or any of that. Or you know, I know that he had got a show cause letter for violations, but did Oregon ever really get in trouble for any of that? I don't think so.
I didn't really hear anything, so I'm thinking it's gone. No, it'll be very interesting. I think a job that would have been awesome for him, obviously it's gone now. And it's not obviously a top-tier job, but Maryland, just because he would have been able to have the same environment that he had at Oregon.
I think Maryland would have been a good job for him. I don't know about Virginia. I'm not sure if he would have been able to do and have the level of control that he would want at Virginia. Yeah. I think USC would have been a great place for him.
Oh, yeah.
Well, outside of that, I think Miami got their number one super target with Mark Richt, so I'm not sure that that really would have been much of a discussion point there.
Well, you looked at a few.
Unfortunately, it seems like change was on the horizon in Philadelphia for a long time. I think it would have been better for him if he had known this weeks ago. I know the owner wanted to take his time to make a good decision, but in a way, he kind of screwed him because he could have been on the market and basically had his pick of a couple of jobs. Instead of having to sit out a year.
Well, and you wonder for some of these programs, they'd sort of jumped the gun on these hirings. South Carolina is the one that comes to mind for me. And you kind of wonder, would they have waited a little longer had they known Chip Kelly would have actually been on the market? Heck, what does that do to the Les Miles situation? I don't think LSU would have changed their mind about that. But for all the talk that happened, you know, having a coach with that kind of clout on the market changes a lot of things.
I think the other school that'll be interesting to look at next year, because, A, I think they're in for a really, really rough season, is I could see A&M parting ways with Kevin Sumlin, especially if Kelly sits out a year and is sitting, you know, at his nice house wherever he vacations. I know he's from Vermont, I think, or New Hampshire, you know, so I know maybe he's got a house up in the mountains. I don't know. You know, if he's sitting there, I think that becomes a very interesting one is if they, you know, if A&M has a 7-5 or an 8-4 or worse season, which they've lost their top two quarterbacks. So it's going to be a little rough.
Oh yeah. Two number one quarterbacks, right?
I believe so. I know Kyler Murray was the number one dual threat coming out. And I want to say Kyle Allen was a top five. I mean, and he may have been. But it's just, I mean, that's such an interesting, you know, I think to me, it's really a balance because it's a very much, I don't want to say completely entitled, because not every recruit is like that, but I think a lot of the way recruiting's gotten to be where kids from the ninth grade are sat here and told how great they are and how great they are and how great they are. These kids come in with this sense of, well, I'm obviously the greatest, I'm obviously the best, and you come into a college environment, which is completely different from high school, especially at the quarterback position. And you know, you're going to be in for adjustments. And I think gone are the days where a high-profile guy comes in, redshirts for a year. The enrolling early is the new redshirt. That's what you're seeing. You're seeing the college quarterbacks enroll in January, using that spring as almost a mini redshirt to learn the playbook, to learn the game, and coming in and expecting to start in the fall. To go back in history, we haven't had a true freshman national championship winning quarterback since, I want to say, Oklahoma in the 80s. You know, I mean, even your guys like Jameis Winston was a redshirt freshman. He came in, sat a year, and then won a national title. You know, and you see it in the NFL too. These high drafted quarterbacks are expected to. You're not going to see a Carson Palmer again, who comes in, sits a year to adjust, and then starts.
All right. Well, I think this is maybe a topic for another day. We kind of got off the Chip Kelly discussion a little bit, but we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. As always, thank you, Nigel and Andrew, for joining us. To all our listeners out there, thank you as always for listening. If you have any questions, please send an email to toemeatleather@gmail.com. Again, that is toemeatleather@gmail.com. One last note. I think, Nigel, I think you're dropping to 3-5 now. I don't want to just go ahead and write them off, but I think UNC's done. You want to take the mute off and say anything?
You're right, Logan. Too little too late right now. What's going on? Too little too late.
All right. Well, anyway, we'll check back in next week if there's a big surprise upset at the last second. To all you listeners out there, have a good night and good luck on your New Year's resolutions. Bye-bye.